believe it. Never be afraid to call. I'll be waiting over the horizon. Don't you worry, I'm not very far. I light it up, show you the way. I light it up, show you the way.
Okay, and we're back. That was GRL with Lighthouse. I got a little backstory on that song. Apparently, GRL had a member of their group commit suicide, and that song was kind of written in dedication to that member. And that was recommended by Donna, who's in studio with us right now. She's from Diversity and Inclusion, Chico State Campus. And Donna, would you like to tell us more about yourself?
Sure. My name is Donna Smith, and I started out as an intern at Stonewall Alliance, and then I eventually became a board member, and now I'm the chair of the board of directors at Stonewall. And my paying job is I work for the Office of Diversity and Inclusion at Chico State.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, Donna. And Nicole, you're here again from Stonewall Alliance.
Hello again.
So anybody that's just tuning in, this is our second episode on the gender and sexuality. Oh, man, I was going to do it.
Gender and sexual minorities.
See, I was like, I wanted to say sexuality. Okay, gender and sexual minority.
GSM.
Community. And we covered last week, we talked about Stonewall Alliance and some of the services. Ian joined us and talked about some of the outreach services that were available through Stonewall Alliance. And today we were hoping to focus more on some of the issues and challenges that are facing the population in the GSM community. So happy that both of you could join us.
Awesome.
And
thank you.
For anybody that's listening, I'm not in the driver's seat tonight, so this is feeling unusual, but it's feeling good. So
she's antsy.
Yeah, I'm like a little. My flow is different tonight. So yeah,
we're
so
mixing it up. I'm loving the 21st century.
Yes. So for anybody that's curious about what Stonewall is exactly, so because Stonewall is actually where we started. That was the inspiration of doing the show, or the series of shows, because we've had several friends reach out to us and say that we needed to do some representation for the gender and sexual minority here in our community. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we actually got a chance to say what the mission of Stonewall is. So for anybody that's listening, I would like to let you know what it is. Stonewall Alliance is committed to cultivating a safe, open, inclusive environment for all members of the gender and sexual minority and ally community. Stonewall Alliance unites, strengthens, and affirms a community through support, resources, education, advocacy, and celebration. And the celebration part is a really important part, because that's also a reason we started doing the shows right now, is because Chico Pride is coming up at the end of August, and we'll talk more about Chico Pride hopefully towards the end of the show, as well as next week we'll focus more about what is going on for Pride and how you can come out and celebrate. So yeah, ladies, thanks again for being here. And so what is your, you said that you came to Stonewall Alliance, Donna, through internships in Chico State. And what is sort of your passion and drive for being so involved right now?
Well, what brought me to Stonewall was I came out later in life. I was 40 years old when I came out. That was 8 years ago. And I was fortunate enough to live in the Bay Area. So I was able to get a lot of resources from San Francisco. When I moved up to Chico 4 years ago, I was looking for resources. And so when I found Stonewall, I was just amazed at how many resources and how many people really cared. And so I was finishing up my bachelor's degree and I needed an internship. And so I talked with Tom Kellum, who's the executive director, and I did a 100-hour internship there. And I just fell in love with Stonewall because I think that it really offers so much to the GSM community. And for people who are a little bit out of their comfort zone and looking for some help, Stonewall was great. And so that's where my passion comes from.
Beautiful. So when you say that you are fortunate, is it because of the difference in diversity here in Butte County versus in San Francisco?
When I came out in the Bay Area, interesting, I didn't really feel as though I mattered. There were so many people, and they were just directing me, and I really didn't feel like I had anybody to take me under their wing. But when I came here, people really cared. And I got into conversations with people who, you know, had come out after having a family and being married and being in a heterosexual relationship. And so for me, it just felt as though people genuinely cared here.
Absolutely. So that sense of community, I think that's a big common theme for people that either live in Chico or visit Chico, is that sense of community that you don't really get in larger areas.
Exactly.
So it's so glad to see that, you know, that Stonewall is carrying that mission through as well. So earlier today, I was hanging out at the tourist shelter working on some other projects, and I saw that Stonewall Alliance is involved there as well, or is involved with the homeless population as well. And so I'm just kind of curious, since we're talking about issues that pertain to the gender and sexual minority population community, how that, you know, what it is you're doing working with the homeless population, and maybe how other people can get involved.
Yeah. Well, we kind of started working with the Torah shelter. I actually don't know how long ago. It's been a while, because it came to our attention that a lot of folks who are homeless, and utilize the Torres Shelter's services are members of the gender and sexual minority community. Our community has a pretty high rate of homelessness, and a lot of it is because people don't have support from their families and they have to leave their families. And, you know, a lot of factors come into play. But we have a lot of folks, particularly in the trans community, who come to Stonewall and need help finding housing and finding shelter. And we started working with the Torres Shelter to provide a safer space for trans people at the shelter. A lot of the time, they have segregated dorms. They have a men's dorm and a women's dorm. And when folks are trans, that is not safe and it's not comfortable. Particularly for trans women who are housed in the men's dorm, they face a lot of hostility. And so we've had quite a few folks who need help, you know, having a safer space within Torres Shelter. And so we work with the folks over there to create a safer space and allow trans women to be in the women's dorm. We've also done some sensitivity trainings for the Torres Shelter staff, so that the folks who are there are also aware of the populations that they serve. Not only aware, but also sensitive and, you know, using preferred names, preferred gender pronouns, and treating everybody with equal respect in that regard. And recently, the Torres Shelter has formed an LGBTQ, or no, wait, is it an LGBTQ group or is it a trans group? You know?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, they're forming a new group. That addresses some gender and sexual minority there, which is awesome that they're, you know, reaching out and doing that and having that organization.
Absolutely. And actually, the support group meets at Stonewall now. It was over at the shelter, and now it's moved to Stonewall. There's more space for it. And it meets every Friday in the afternoon. So you can give Stonewall a call to find out what time that is if you yourself need support within the Torres Shelter.
And how can people get a hold of you if they're wanting to get more information about that?
You can either call the Stonewall office at 893-3336, or you can email us at center@stonewallchico.org.
Fantastic. So are you, Nicole, involved with the sensitivity trainings?
No, I'm not. Okay. I have definitely attended sensitivity trainings, and I've given a couple, but that is not my job.
Right.
Ian, who was with us last time, his position is the outreach and education coordinator, and training is his daily.
Awesome. Yeah. He seems really passionate about it, so it's a good alignment.
Yeah,
I was just curious if you could give us some kind of general areas that you're covering when you're talking about sensitivity training, or when Ian is.
Well, we talk a lot about the different identities within the gender and sexual minority community, and we start with the traditional, or not traditional, but we start with the acronym that a lot of people are familiar with, LGBTQ, and we define each letter kind of as we did on air last week, and then we really expand on that because as many people as there are in the world, there are identities. And so we talk about, in our trainings, respecting identities and whatever label people choose for themselves. We also, in trainings, talk a lot about the difference between biological gender, the gender that we're assigned at birth based on our genitalia and chromosomes, and gender expression, how we dress, how we present in the world, and gender identity. and then how gender is also different from sexual orientation, who you're attracted to, who you're drawn to and have relationships with.
So a lot of education is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these terms, and what I said last week at the end of our show, is that it's amazing because your job is so focused on talking about what most people are comfortable talking about, even in heterosexual world, which is sexuality. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of education around like what your gender is. It's like, oh, your gender versus sex versus orientation. It's like there's a lot of new information, I think, for people to take on. So. More power to you.
A big part of the training is also making sure that there is plenty of time for questions because it is a safe space to ask all the questions that you feel like maybe you're not allowed to ask normally within a, you know, the safe context of like, this is a professional I'm asking and it's okay for me to ask this now versus in my daily life.
I always ask Google.
Which is good. I mean, the internet is amazing, and it's been so revolutionary for younger populations, younger generations to get connected in resources and communities and actually coming out at an earlier age. And the internet is also something that just anybody can post on. So sometimes doing your research on the internet when it comes to identities can be a little dicey.
Understood.
Mm-hmm. In talking about how there's a lot to learn, you know, there is kind of a cross-cultural attitude of, seems like every few years I gotta learn, you know, this PC term for that and this PC. So what, now there's this new thing I gotta learn? And I think the stereotype is the older the person is, the less likely they're going to put the effort into learning the new thing. And, you know, I think we referenced either on air or off the concept of the racist grandpa, you know, who's like 80, 90 and a little bit racist. And you want that to be different, but you also probably acknowledge that it's not going to be different. And there's like this point, you know, where people have this reluctance to learn. And I think it could be argued that youth and vitality comes from a desire to, you know, is an example of a desire to want and learn and be curious. So what I'd like to, you know, incentivize some of our listeners who maybe don't feel like this information pertains to them, you know? So let's talk about like hard facts, like percentages and things like that. In my own independent research, I found that according to Wikipedia, so, you know, internet's finest, somewhere between 5-12% of the population in America would be described as having alternate orientation of some kind, you know, and
even I want to say that that's people that identify, right?
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's less than 5 that identify, but they say up to 12% because so many probably don't. And so that was the information I came across. Like I said, in my really reliable source of Wikipedia.
Right. I think it's hard to generalize when people aren't being, when they're not self-electing to be counted. Because I think it's the same thing that we talked about before in one of our episodes about disabilities. You know, people, a lot of people that have disabilities go a long time, maybe ever, you know, admitting to themselves or anybody else that they have a disability. Mm-hmm. And that's something that's almost even more socially acceptable to admit to, you know, because of how the stereotypes that exist. And so, you know, I appreciate Wikipedia's generalization from 5% to 12%, well, you know, but their counting of error. Mm-hmm. But also, I think that, you know, I'm really glad that it's now the gender and sexual minority because the spectrum is really big, you know, and what people feel comfortable admitting to is a different story, I think. Mm-hmm. Or admitting, I think, is the wrong word that I'm, you know, that choose to share. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to say.
Well, I suppose what I was getting at with, you know, the percentage game is that that's either 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 10, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. So when people think this doesn't pertain to me, you know, if 1 out of 10 of your friends had a religious conviction and it was a good friend of yours, would you be interested to find out about that because you value your friendship with your friend and be respectful of their terms and their diet or what have you. So What are some ways that Stonewall and Company incentivizes education, gets people excited about learning, and fight that reluctance that some people might have?
Well, I think as humans, we really like to be able to put a face, you know, so getting to know somebody, and I think that's something we all do, whether we're on the board or we're a staff member or, you know, we're a volunteer, is by telling our own stories, that kind of humanizes, you know, GSM for people. And I'll tell you a quick story. I have a really good friend who's in her 70s and her husband's 83. And when I came out, they are very conservative. That was back when, you know, the whole Prop 8 thing was going on. And they voted for Prop 8, which, just to refresh your memory, that was banning same-sex marriage and not having marriage equality. So I had a conversation with my friend and her husband, and they were telling me why they believed that marriage was between a man and a woman. And then I told them, but you love me, so don't you want to see me be with somebody who I love and have the same rights you do? And it was just almost like turning a block over, because as soon as I humanized it, Bob, who was 83, looks at me and he goes, you know, I love you. And if that means voting for something that maybe I didn't understand, now I do. And I want you to have the same rights as me. So again, it's just about humanizing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That personal interaction and story, testimony.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's going on that laptop over there?
We're looking. We're getting some information here. But what I do want to say.
Figures for you.
Yes.
Good.
About what you were just sharing about your friend Bob, is that it's so true that mm-hmm. humanization part is so important. My father is in a similar situation where his brother, you know, who identifies as gay, he had a really hard time his entire life accepting that, until, you know, he realized that he just wanted his brother to be happy, and it didn't really matter that, like, he didn't really understand it. Because I think his whole life he was trying to understand it. He was trying to, like, put it in the box. He was like, why don't you want to be married? Why don't you want to have children? Instead of just, like, allowing somebody to have the experience that they're going to have. And I think, you know, it doesn't matter what age that they are. You know, once you have that ability to really know the person, it changes the story.
Exactly.
So, how does your organization that you work with on your day job sort of relate to the work you do at Stonewall?
At the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, it's about including everybody and celebrating everybody's differences. So, you know, GSM, that is a difference. And so we do, you know, we do have different information about GSM in our office, although we haven't gone to gender sexual minorities. We're still LGBTQ. On campus, we even have a faculty and staff GLBT group. We have conversations on diversity and inclusion, which happens every semester. We have four or five. And within those different talks, you know, we do, it's all about education. It's about, again, humanizing, you know, whether we're talking about people who are Asian, or we're talking about, we're talking different cultures, we're talking about the Latino culture. It's just all about education and humanizing and making people aware of things that they wouldn't necessarily know.
I think one of the biggest struggles of modern society is maintaining diversity while creating peace and love and oneness around the world. How do you homogenize under general principles by which everybody can agree to, and still maintain cultural diversity, still keep tribal identity, still keep that. So what, I mean, to me, diversity and inclusion is a very specific terminology that addresses that fine line of how do you keep a world family diverse. So what kind of techniques or specific efforts do you guys put forth for that?
Well, I know the director of the Office in Diversity. He is the one who really should be talking about this office. But some of the things that we do is we want everybody to be represented when you're talking about higher education. So if you have 18% Hispanic attendance, then you also want faculty and staff to resemble that, if that makes sense. So we want everybody to celebrate. So some of the things we do is we do like the multicultural welcome celebrations or receptions when school first starts. And everybody's welcome. So that's how we're celebrating different cultures, like reentry students, Asian Pacific Islanders, the Black welcome, the queer welcome. So it's a way that people can learn something that they're not used to. It's not necessarily that they have to take it on as their own practice, but they can say, oh, okay, and just kind of walk away with a little bit more knowledge.
Absolutely. So if you're just tuning in, we are Love in the 21st Century, hosted by Tammy and Julian. I'm Tammy. He's Julian. Not saying anything yet. The guy on the show. And we are joined by Donna, who is the chair of Stonewall Alliance, and Nicole, who is currently but leaving the office manager position at Stonewall Alliance. And we are talking about the gender and sexual minority. If you have any questions or comments that you want to share, this is a call-in radio show. Give us a call, 895-1114, or message us on the Facebook, and I'll do my best to check the messages. And we actually did get a question last week, so I'm going to ask you right now. Mm-hmm. And the question was, when someone identifies themselves as queer, is it inappropriate to ask what that means for them?
I think that's an awesome question to ask. You know, and just being open to letting them say, I don't feel like answering that, is, you know, going to be part of that. But yeah, that's a perfect question to ask.
So no attachment else, to the answer.
Right, right. I mean, how else are you going to have a conversation about identity if you don't ask what they mean? Because it's very different for each person who uses it for themselves. So I think that would be a very sensitive and great question to ask.
Absolutely. And I like to say that when I have to ask a difficult question, I usually ask the person first, can I ask a question? Because I feel like that kind of sets them up, like that it might be a question that they might feel a little uncomfortable with, or might be a challenging question. And so if I tell them beforehand that I'm planning on asking them a question instead of just asking, you know, can I ask you what you identify as, then they're prepared a bit more. So it's kind of like padding the question.
The thing is that when you say, can I ask you a question?
You're already asking a question.
My response is, you didn't leave me a choice though, did you?
So if you're talking to anybody but Julian.
But I think that the important thing with that scenario is that the person already tells you what their label is, and then you can ask them to define it for themselves. So it's not like, it's not appropriate to say, how do you identify, unless you have a relationship with that person that's already an okay question to ask, you know? Mm-hmm. If you're not sure if it's okay to ask, then maybe it's not.
Although, like Nicole was saying, you can ask preferred pronouns also.
That's a good way to go about that. Mm-hmm.
I have a dear friend for a decade and a half, and she has a mailman who is clearly just nervous around her because he doesn't know.
A mailman? Like a postal delivery
person? Okay. Who goes to the on a regular basis. And she laughed. She's like, I know he's just trying to figure out whether to say he or she or whatever. And I just let him. She's like, I'm amused by it. And I just smile and I'm just really friendly and I'm waiting for him to ask. And she's like, it's been years, but he's just uncomfortable and confused. I guess my point is she's good hearted about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really friendly and doesn't get offended because mm-hmm. he doesn't know. And I think that that's something people who don't know might want to know is, mm-hmm. you know, so long as you're sincere, people are forgiving of ignorance. You know, if you don't know something, you know, if you're sincere in your delivery and your interest in learning and growing, I think most people would be accepting and supportive of that.
I think that it's fair to say that that's not true for a lot of people, particularly folks in the trans community who are up against every moment, every day, people mm-hmm. wondering what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for folks who are cisgender, who may express their gender in different ways, in genderqueer ways, that can be more fun to play with. You know, seeing other people interact with them in different contexts. But for folks who identify as trans, that's not always fun for them. In fact, it can be really scary.
Absolutely. You know, it's reminding me of something that a friend of mine posted earlier today, and for I'm not going to necessarily quote the entire post, but it was something to the effect of through their transition, how they were treated mm-hmm. by various people, where like when they were in their, you know, their male body, that they were, you know, they were treated quote unquote normally, but then as a transition went on, they were actually treated worse than we treat most people. Mm-hmm. And then finally, as they are, you know, fully getting into their transition female body, that they're feeling, you know, they're getting more praise for that transition, but just how mm-hmm. difficult it really is. But also what I found was really remarkable about what they shared is that how much we are so concerned about the exterior look. Like, why does it matter what someone looks like on their outside in treating them like a person? Like, whether or not you can figure out if they're, you know, trans or not, or male or female, you should still treat them like you treat anybody else. It doesn't really matter what their body looks like in terms of self-respect or respecting them as a person. And so I'm praise the person that, you know, she's so patient with somebody that gets nervous around them. It's like, you know, she's not necessarily like a pit bull, you know? She's just a person, you know? I can understand if she was like standing there with like a butchering knife, like with a smile on her face, like, you know, getting a little nervous. But, you know, it's just interesting how people mm-hmm. react based on how on the exterior looks.
Yeah. It's amazing because the fear comes from not knowing what's in their pants, which is outrageous.
Right. Like, that's why they have pants on. That's why they have pants.
Right.
so you can't see.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, if you're tuning in again, this is Love in the 21st Century. Here in a minute, we're going to get into talking about some of the issues that are addressing here in Butte County, and then also some of Donna's experience and specialty, how it relates to what we're talking about tonight. Okay. So stay tuned.
Back in 2008, Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein declared, "There are parts of government that can be run like a business and should be run like a business." Thus, the chairwoman of the Senate Committee overseeing congressional facilities privatized the restaurants and other food services in the U.S. Senate. Sure enough, those dining spots now turn a profit because they are being run like a business, specifically a business like McDonald's. Restaurant Associates, the New York outfit that got the House and Senate food contract, profits by paying poverty-level wages and generally mistreating the cooks, waitstaff, and other people who put the service in food service. Wages are less than $11 an hour, well below the very expensive cost of living in the Washington area. Everybody has second jobs, says one weary worker. And when our $174,000 a year members of Congress adjourn for the 3 months or so of vacations they take each year, the food service workers are sent away with no pay at all. I should note that restaurant associates did give a pay raise to some workers not long ago. It was 3 cents an hour. That's not a raise, it's an insult. I serve food to some of the most powerful people on earth, says a Senate cook. They often talk of expanded opportunity for workers, but most don't seem to notice or care that workers in their own building are struggling to survive. Care? A key Senate committee chairman, Representative Tom Graves, recently showed how much Congress cares about the inequality by refusing even to consider requiring food service contractors to pay a living wage. It's really not within the scope of this committee to micromanage all contracts, he sniffed. This is Jim Hightower saying, think of how that makes the Capitol dining staff feel. If I was old Tom, from now on, I wouldn't eat anywhere in the Capitol without taking a food taster with me.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right, welcome back to Love in the 21st Century. We are talking with Donna and Nicole from Stonewall Alliance Center here in Chico, and we've been talking about the gender and sexual minority community here in Chico, which is located in Butte County. And so hopefully we can maybe just, we only got a little bit more time left together because we do have another guest that's going to come and talk about an event that's happening here in September. But I do want to maybe touch on what either one of you think are some of the kind of general issues that are facing folks in this broader community that relate to gender and sexual minority issues. And also, Donna, if you wanted to talk a little bit about your own past experience and working in that area and Stonewall Alliance.
Yeah, cool. Great. Thank you. Yeah, I would say that the homeless community, in particular the trans homeless community, which we already talked about, is pretty prevalent here in Butte County, as well as trans folks who are in need of health care and proper medical care. And I think Ian is going to talk about the trans community more when he's on the show later. But I think that the veteran community here in Butte County, is also definitely a community that Stonewall wants to work with more. We have quite a few folks, in our community who are veterans, and Donna knows a lot about that.
Yes, I do. Within Butte County, there are a lot of people who are within the GSM community who are veterans. I think also sometimes we don't realize that within the trans community, there, especially when you're talking about trans women, you're talking about a lot of hypermasculinity. So you do have people who were former military, and not just like supply clerks like myself, but you're talking about people who were special forces and people who saw battle. And within Butte County, there are quite a few. And so they really need resources. And the thing is, when you're a veteran, and back in the day when you identified, you know, within the GSM community, you never came forward because it wasn't safe. And even as a veteran, once you get out of active duty or being in the reserves, you still have, and I'm talking for myself, I know when I first had to go to the VA for medical, I was really afraid. I wanted to go to counseling, but I didn't want to talk to anybody who couldn't relate to me identifying as a lesbian woman. And one thing I do have to say about the VA here in Chico, and even the VA in Sacramento, we're working together, and we're also working with Butte County Veteran Services to really get the GSM veterans population. We're going to have a luncheon, and then the different, like the veterans office for Butte County and VA in Sacramento and here in Butte County are going to let them know what their resources are, because being a veteran, and especially if you were in during any kind of conflict, you do have resources and you could even have benefits. And so we just want to make sure that that population knows what, you know, what is due to them. And so that's something that Stonewall, we're really working with. And there's another board member who is working with me to try and make this happen and bring this community forward so they can get the resources.
Why do you think it's important for the gender and sexual minority veteran community to come together and know their resources and know each other?
Well, I think, you know, being in the military and identifying as a lesbian, you never wanted anybody to know that you identified that way. And so I think it's important to know that you have a family, you know, as veterans, and I can talk about myself. When you meet another veteran, there's a bond and a camaraderie that you just don't have with everybody else, because they understand you. They understand what you went through in basic training. They understand what you went through, you know, when you were working on the flight line or when you were, you know, participating in a conflict. And so I think why that's so important is because you're talking about the GSM population, plus, you know, being a veteran and feeling alone. So it's so important to bring those two entities together so you can have a community and a family.
It sounds like a really important group that needs support. I mean, we all need support on some level or another, so it's amazing right. that Stonewall Alliance is around, but also specifically addressing veterans, because, like you said, it's still really not an okay thing to, you know, to be outwardly identifying as anything but heterosexual in the military. So to at least have space with people after you're out of the military that can be that support for you and can identify, I went through the same experience, and I can identify with not being able to be comfortable enough or, you know, have anybody to share my story with, really, to finally be able to have that opportunity seems like a really closing a chapter in some people's lives.
Right, and that's important.
Wonderful. So thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. I don't know if there's anything else either of you want to add about some of the issues. I mean, I'm sure that we could go on a while talking about the issues, really. We talked about two, you know, bigger ones that are prevalent in our community and I'm sure, you know, relevant other communities, which are homelessness issues in the gender and sexual minority, as well as veteran issues. But, you know, there's lots of federal and state and medical issues. And, you know, the list goes on whether or not people have rights in certain country to even identify at all. So we, you know, can't even say we scratched the surface because we didn't. But, you know, we talked for an hour or less than that about some of the issues that pertain to people that are in Butte County. So if you have more questions about Stonewall Alliance Center and what they do, you can find them at 6 and Bloom?
Yes.
And then you can also find them online at StonewallAllianceCenter.org.
StonewallChico.org.
StonewallChico.org. One day I'll get that right. So thank you so much, ladies, for joining us. Next, we're going to have a representative from the Weaving Women's Wisdom join us to talk about an event that's happening at the end of September that I'm oh so excited to talk about. And have the listening audience find out more information about.
And this is Sasha Rose with her Electric Canyon Convergence version of Love Yourself.
You can't love nobody else if you can't love yourself. You can't love nobody else if you can't love yourself. You gotta take time to make time. Love yourself. Take time to make time. Love yourself. You gotta listen to your heart song. Listen to your heart song. Listen to your heart song. Take time to make time to learn yourself. You gotta learn yourself. Learn yourself. You gotta learn yourself. And listen to your heart's heart. Listen to your heart's heart. And
all right, if you're just tuning in, this is Love in the 21st Century, and we have been talking about the gender and sexual minority community, and our guest just left, who will be back next week to talk more about the Pride Chico event that's happening at the end of August, so stay tuned for that. Right now, we are joined by Lily, who is a part of the Weaving Women's Wisdom Gathering that's going to be happening at the end of September. So, Lily, thank you so much for joining us. Absolutely. So can you tell us what Weaving Women's Wisdom is, what the gathering actually is?
Weaving Women's Wisdom is an annual gathering of women, and the intention is to gather women to create an inspirational culture of sisters who
support each other. And
sorry about that, your mic was actually potted down, so if you wouldn't mind starting from the
absolutely.
Top of what Weaving Women's Wisdom is, that would be great.
Weaving Women's Wisdom is an annual gathering of women, and our intention is to create a supportive culture of women in Butte County and beyond.
Awesome. So it's in its second year.
It's in its second year, yes.
And how many women are you hoping to have there this year?
This year we've expanded, and our cap is 200 women.
How exciting, 200 women. And, you know, envisioning the Concow Campground, which is where this gathering is going to be held, is such a beautiful location for such a gathering. And 200 women, when you think about the population of Chico, and you think about really the population of Butte County who this gathering is reaching out to, you know, that's just a drop in the bucket. So this is something that if it calls to your heart right now, where you're like, what is Weaving Women's Wisdom? Look it up. And where can they look it up?
www.weavingwomenswisdom.com.
So that is where you can find out more information. And I have a really special place for this event in my heart because I'm also involved in organizing the teen area this year.
And which will be awesome.
Which is going to be amazing. you know, it's that transition in your life that, you know, kind of gets like, in some families is highlighted, but I think in my family, like my parents didn't really know what to do. So what I'm hoping to bring this year is to bring some recognition to that transition and inviting young women to celebrate that transition that's happening in their life, that they're just starting their womanhood. You know, I just turned 30 and I barely feel like I'm starting, like I'm a woman now. Like, but I mean that transition from being, you're not a little girl anymore. Like you understand more things about the world. Your body is changing. And how do you have a community that recognizes that? And how do you share that with people? So I'm really excited to bring that aspect to the Weaving Women's Wisdom Gathering this year. But there's also some other amazing things that are happening. So can you maybe touch on some of the other workshops or things that people can look forward to?
Yeah, our workshop lineup this year, I myself am so excited to attend workshops. We have workshops in music and movement, in community building, in social justice, in arts and crafts, in earth skills, in women's bodies and wellness, as well as spirituality. And personally, there's a storytelling workshop I'm excited to attend. I'm facilitating a birth into being limbic imprint recoding meditation workshop, which I'm just so happy to offer to the women in this community. There's going to be some great drumming and dancing workshops, and I know slipper felting will be there.
Slipper felting, yay! It's so fun.
Something for everybody in all ages. And we're even expanding out our wellness area to include a nurture tent for women with newborns and real young infants. So we want to be real supportive of everybody that comes to meet their needs, as well as the elders in the community. We've expanded to allow RV camping, and we will provide assistance for anybody that needs help camping. And there's also a children's program for all children 3 to 7. So it's just something for everybody. great.
Yeah, such a sweet group of women that are organizing it. And anyone that's out there in the community that, like I said, is feeling that calling to be a part of it, you know, I know that women from time to time can have a really hard time connecting with other women. And so this is an opportunity to really find that sweet group of women that really want to nurture one another and see each other prosper. And like Lily said, it's for all women that are welcome. So any women that are also in a transition, and I feel like that ties into directly what we were just talking about.
Oh, absolutely.
About gender people. That you are welcome as well to this gathering.
Anyone that identifies as a woman is welcome.
Yes, so that's been a really important component that was brought up about last year, and we want to let people know that is definitely something that is going to be happening this year.
Absolutely.
So, Lily, what is something that you particularly, what have you checked out the workshop list yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So, you mentioned the slipper workshop. Is there anything else that really is speaking to your heart that you want to be a part of this year?
Hooping.
Hooping, yes.
I love hooping. Yeah, and I'm also really excited for the food and the shared meal time. Mm. I think that really calls to my heart, and that way of gathering and connecting that's a little bit less formal.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to the workshops, we also do ceremony, and that piece of it that really deeply nourishes our need to be seen and be witnessed in a group. I find so much joy from being a part of our ceremonies.
I'm looking forward to the non-organized parts too, because I feel like that's somewhere where the magic happens, because you're there doing workshops and you're there to learn. There's a lot of things that are going to be, you're going to be able to learn. There's a lot of amazing, talented, skilled women in our community that are going to be facilitating workshops there on, as Lily said, various topics. But really, like, being able to hang out with those people and just hang out with everyone that attends and being in this really sacred space of being open to connection, a lot of magic happens. Just beautiful music, beautiful connections, art, just real self-expression. So I'm really excited about that aspect of it as well.
If you're interested to learn more about what workshops are going to be offered, they're all listed online at www.weavingwomenswisdom.com.
Right. So really, the website is the way to get connected, because there isn't going to be any Facebook promotion for this event, because wanting to keep it in that intimate feeling. So if you're feeling the call right now, the best place is to find the website.
Yes.
And to find more information.
You can register online, and you can register your children online, and you can pay online. And there's also an option to pay in person if your online payment isn't your options.
Yes. And also, is there anywhere people can find more information in Chico? Like, is there somebody they can contact or a place that they can go to find out more information?
There's a phone number listed on the website, and they can call that number, and somebody would be happy to talk to them and see if they'd be a, you know, good person to come to the gathering.
And if you are a person that doesn't have internet access, then there are going to be flyers all around town, so you can get information that way.
There's a flyer at the Chico Natural, which is a good place to go check it out.
And yeah, so if you have any questions, you can find out information there or go to the website. Is there anything else so the dates, we need to know the dates that people need to be saving for.
It's the last weekend of September, so it's the 25th through the 27th. And the ticket includes 6 meals and 2 nights of camping up at Link Kongkow Campground, which is about 40-minute drive outside of Chico.
And it's a really beautiful, amazing space. It's going to be completely reserved this year for the Weaving Women's Wisdom. So it will be a really safe space to feel comfortable. And so all children are welcome?
All children are welcome. And I believe it's boys under age 9 or 10 are welcome as well.
Right. So any boys that are under the age of 9 or 10 are welcome. And what about somebody that might not be able to pay? Are there any other accommodations for people that might need other options?
Absolutely. We have a work trade program, and it's an excellent program where you'll be part of a deeper circle that is really important to the smooth functioning of the whole gathering, and you'll be able to help us hold space the whole weekend.
Great. And I always have a preference to doing work trade, and that's one of the reasons that I'm involved as an organizer, is because I feel like you get to meet some of the women that are really passionate about bringing this to our community. So again, if that's something that you feel called to do, it's a really awesome group of people. Don't let money be a barrier for your participation, but you want to do that sooner than later, because those are going to fill up.
Absolutely. And our registration closes on August 15th, and we're looking pretty... there's a lot of interest in our event. So if you're interested, please go and register now and get your children registered as well.
So yeah, so this is something you do not want to sit back on your laurels and think about. If you're hearing this, go register. And that's weavingwomenswisdom.com. Thank you so much, Lily, for joining us. And
thank you for having me, Tammy.
Absolutely. And we will be with you next week. Stay tuned for Ecotopia.
Indeed. And let's outro with a pretty little song by the Waylon Jennies.